evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, May 29, 2023. Some teachers in South Sudan complain about poor working conditions, low salaries and lack of motivation.
This money cannot even facilitate my daily activity like transportation in Juba, sometimes buying water for myself, you know, and planning for other basic things. The money is not enough.
And some girls in South Sudan say societal stereotypes prevent girls from achieving their dreams.
The South Sudan Coalition on Menstrual Health Management are calling government, development partners and communities of South Sudan to break the taboo around menstruation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Undersecretary in the Ministry of General Education and Instruction says 2.8 million school children have dropped out due to what he describes as terrible conditions in the education sector. Some teachers in South Sudan say the government's approach to the welfare of teachers across the country remains a threat to the improvement of education across the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Officials from UNICEF, the government of South Sudan, and other stakeholders held a roundtable discussion last week on the importance of creating a good environment for teachers. Organized by UNICEF, the discussions focused on teachers' professional development, career growth, motivation, and a positive environment for South Sudan's education sector. Kenny Jimmy Nelson, a teacher at one of the government schools in Juba, says the salary he earns cannot cater for his family welfare.
Me personally, I get £10,564. This money cannot even facilitate my daily activity like transportation in Juba, sometimes buying water for myself, you know, and planning for other basic things. The money is not enough. On top, it is not coming regularly. It takes number of months, and then the money comes. So actually, it has been one of the hitting points and making most of our colleagues running away from profession.
10,654 South Sudanese pounds is currently an equivalent of $10. The undersecretary in the Ministry of General Education and Instruction, Kuyok Abol Kuyok, says the highly paid teachers in government primary schools receive 31,000 South Sudanese pounds, an equivalent of $31 a month. He says last year the government increased allocation to the Ministry of General Education and Instruction from 6% to 12.5% of the annual budget.
The issue is implementation of the budget, the execution of the budget, that is where we fall back. So now we have improved, or we are improving the budgeting process. So we are going to go to 17% of the national budget, the national cake. See, that is below the international benchmarks. International benchmarks are supposed to be 20%.
Tabu Monica is a teacher at the privately owned Godo Primary School in Rajaf Payam. Monica agrees with Nelson, saying a majority of teachers across the country earn too little compared to the work they do.
The major challenge is low payment. The salary is very little and it comes irregular. It's not monthly. Of course, as a female teacher, you're not different from any other female who has gone to school and is working somewhere. So you feel like also to improve your standard of living, but the money is very little that it can't really sustain your personal needs and perhaps family needs.
Kuyok describes the conditions of schools across the country as appalling, saying 2.8 million children are out of school across the country. Kuyok says about 64,000 teachers are working across the country, adding that 20% are permanent employees of the Ministry of Education. According to the Uganda Ministry of Public Service, a professional primary teacher earns around 563,000 Ugandan shillings, an equivalent of $152 a month. While in Kenya, an online publication, Kenyan Consult, says the lowest paid primary school teacher in Kenya earns 17,000 Kenyan shillings, an equivalent of $123 a month. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on school matters, officials from South Sudan's Ministries of Education and Health say ministerial hygiene continues to hinder some South Sudanese girls from completing school. The Director for Gender Equality and Inclusion in South Sudan's Ministry of General Education and Instruction is calling on the government, aid agencies and communities in South Sudan to provide facilities where girls can feel safe at schools during their monthly cycles. For VOA News, Dimo, Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
17-year-old student in Juba, whom we shall identify with her first name, says she started going through her menstruation cycle at the age of 14. Amok says she did not know what was happening to her body since her parents never told her about menstruation.
It was during holiday. It seems strange. I was really afraid. I didn't know how to use or what it is, but and so I decided, I have one of my sister who used to have it, so I borrow her pads. And I didn't know also how to use and how to say that I have got my period for the first time.
A 2019 survey conducted by the South Sudan Ministry of Health and National Bureau of Statistics on menstrual health hygiene management across South Sudan found out that 47% of girls believed menstrual blood is harmful. 52% says boys laughed hold verbal abuses, causing a high rate of school absence and dropouts. Amok says lack of knowledge on menstrual hygiene has contributed to some early unintended pregnancy among school girls.
Many of my fellow girls got an unintended pregnancy due to the lack of information on menstruation, which in most cases our parents did not give us and neither do our schools. Locking other girls in abusive marriage as a result of the pregnancy. In addition, many girls were pulled out of school and forced to child marriage just after seeing their menses due to the negative perception that menses mean marriage, hence increasing mortality rates as their bodies are not yet well developed or built for child delivery.
South Sudan's Ministry of Education and the United Nations Population Fund, or UNFPA, are calling for a joint collaboration and commitment to embark on campaigns that could help in the fight against taboos and negative beliefs around menstruation. Esa Kumu Achire is the Director for Gender Equality and Inclusion in the Ministry of General Education and Instruction. She says some unsafe beliefs associated with menstruation have affected some women and girls across South Sudan.
The South Sudan Coalition on Menstrual Health Management are calling government, development partners and communities of South Sudan to break the taboo around menstruation and take concrete action to ensure that discrimination mindsets are changed. Women and girls' menstrual health are protected. Such harmful socio-cultural norms, stigma, misconceptions, and taboos around menstruation continue to lead to exclusion and discrimination of women and girls.
Emanuela Dwatoka, an activist in South Sudan, says some parents, especially men, still shy away from talking to their girls about menstruation. Dwatoka says her non-profit known as African Youth and Adolescence Network is training school girls and community members to overcome some stereotypes about menstruation.
We have actually integrated menstrual health management into our sexual reproductive health programs, including comprehensive sexuality education, on which we have done several trainings in more than 20 schools from Juba, even in other states, to ensure that young girls have the skills they need to locally produce reusable sanitary pads to help them in times of maybe harsh climatic condition or in case of any humanitarian crisis.
According to the findings of the 2019 survey conducted by South Sudan National Ministry of Health and the National Bureau of Statistics on menstrual health hygiene management, some girls can miss up to 5 school days in a month because of the shame associated with menstruation. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Lake States, where a parliamentary committee in the state legislative assembly says medicine purchased for government health centers and hospitals have found their ways in private pharmacies and clinics in Rumbek Town. The committee is calling on the state and national government to crack down on individuals involved in smuggling medicine meant for government health centers across the state. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Samuel Mawor Majak, chairperson of the Specialized Committee on Health at the Lake State Legislative Assembly, says his team carried out a 3-week assessment in private clinics and pharmacies and found drugs meant for Rumbek State Hospital on display for sale.
People who are in the market are selling government medicine, and people are crying. The communities are always crying. People went to the hospital, they get only paper with no tablet. And now, the government medicine are in the market. People have to tell the truth. So we don't want such a thing. And these people need to be apprenticed to the court of law. For example, we have an Artemisia injection. The owner is the nurse. You cannot go and ask again. Why do we already get the evidence? The one who sell it is the one who works in the hospital.
He says some owners of the private health facilities are also employees of the Rumbek State Hospital. Majak is calling on the state and national ministries of health to apprehend and prosecute, ensure health workers who are involved in misuse of medicine intended for Rumbek Hospital.
These people who already been deployed and they are using government medicine as their private for business, they must be expelled from their assignment. I would like to ask the leadership in the state to take serious measures because this is a part of insecurity. If the medicine are brought to the hospital, and then they are being taken by individuals to the market, that is a crime.
Patients at Rumbek State Hospital have complained about the lack of drugs as well as other government health facilities across the country. The director of Rumbek State Hospital, Dr. Teran Madit Teran, says state hospital ran out of medicines after a consortium known as Health Full Pan pulled out of the area last year.
I don't have any information about that. The health system has been supported or run by Health Full Pan, which has just recently pulled out. And they are the one which are bringing these medications. Since November last year, the HPF is no longer there. So we have been facing a lot of challenges regarding limitation and shortage of medications and so forth. So for me, issues to do like that they found some medications in the market and that belong to the Minister of Health, for me I can say this is wrong information because I know what we have in the hospital.
Dr. Teran says owners of the private pharmacies and clinics in Lagos State could have brought supplies of medicine from Juba. The undersecretary in the National Health Ministry, Dr. Nip Majur, told South Sudan in Focus that she has heard about the availability of government-supplied medicine on sale at private clinics and pharmacies in Lagos State. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur, reporting in Rumbek, Lagos State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Somalia held a book fair after 3 years. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? Speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way. But hopefully, if God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I need and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudan's warring sides are under pressure to extend a shaky ceasefire in their battle for control of the country after two key international mediators signaled impatience with persistent truce violations. Yesterday, the United States and Saudi Arabia called out Sudan's military and its rival, the paramilitary Rapid Support Force, for breaches of a week-long truce, which expired tonight. Sudan descended into chaos after fighting erupted mid-April between the military led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the RSF, commanded by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. There are estimates nearly 900 civilians have been killed and thousands wounded. The head of the United Nations Refugee Agency today warned estimates for the number of refugees in Sudan may be low. More than 35,000 people have already fled across the borders, with most heading to Egypt, Chad, and South Sudan. More than 1 million have been displaced within Sudan. UNHCR's head, Filippo Grandi, said the agency had focused about 1 million people would flee Sudan over 6 months. Now, he says, the number may be conservative. The Mogadishu Book Fair, an annual literacy event that was launched in 2015, took place in Mogadishu Wednesday to Friday after a three-year break because of the pandemic. This year's book fair attracted a diverse group of intellectuals, scholars, publishers, and book lovers. The event at the National Theatre was symbolic and shows Somalia is transforming post-conflict through knowledge sharing and promoting a reading culture. Mohammed Sheikh Noor reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
At the beginning of the event, a traditional dance performance was presented for the audience to enjoy. In the National Theatre, home to the traditional folk dancer team, a man dressed in a costume blew fire into the air as book lovers and writers watched. Mohammed Sheikh Ali, a graduate of Ohio State University, is the founder of the Mogadishu Book Fair. Starting in 2015, he has faced numerous challenges to host the event annually. His motivation is to promote reading, Somali culture, and heritage by bringing together literary creativists and young people.
My feelings towards holding this book fair after 3 years after the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, with such a large number of attendees, indicates that we have overcome the worry and pain caused by the pandemic that afflicted the country and the entire world.
Among the many international guests at the event is South African author and blogger Lerato Magwethe, who excitedly joined the dancing troupe.
This is such a privilege and an honor for me. I have wanted to come to Mogadishu since 2019. So for me to finally be here and to be here when there's a big cultural celebration is simply a dream come true.
Professor Mohamed Mukhtar is a lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania
in the United States and a distinguished researcher of Somali history. He brought his book on the history of Somali people.
It is true that the book I wrote was not written for the purpose of making money, and its publication was encouraged by the youth here, as you can see. And they even sponsored its production. Since I am on its byline, that is why I am here, and I'm grateful for their encouragement.
The Mogadishu Book Fair is a good opportunity for budding authors to showcase their work. Aisha Hassan has written a book about the cordial ties between Turkey and Somalia.
I cannot express in words how happy I am to be able to display here the book that I have been writing for the past 3 years. This is my first time to show my book to the public.
Nasteha Ahmed encourages Somali children to read and write. She teaches them about their culture, poetry, and traditional Somali tales.
And the way the book fair was organized is the best I have seen, including the section for the children.
The founder, Muhammad Sheikh Ali, ignored negative perceptions on his home country to put together a literary event that has blossomed in a country where insurgency had become an obstacle to social and economic development. Muhammad Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
Today is a Memorial Day here in the United States. It's a holiday dedicated to those who died while serving in America's wars. To commemorate the day, which falls on the last Monday in May, people flocked to Washington to decorate the graves of fallen military service members, attend parades, and visit national monuments. VOA's Penelope Paolo has more.
American flags decorate the graves of the over 228,000 service members buried at Arlington National Cemetery. For this annual Flags In ceremony, which started in 1948, more than 1,000 soldiers and volunteers place flags in front of the headstones in advance of Memorial Day, a U.S. holiday observed on the last Monday of May, honoring the service members who sacrificed their lives fighting for their country. In Washington, over a dozen military monuments are dedicated to those who died fighting for the United States in conflicts ranging from the American Revolution in the 1700s to modern conflicts like the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and beyond. One of the best-known Memorial Day stops is the Marine Corps War Memorial, featuring a statue modeled after the iconic 1945 photograph of Marines raising the flag on the Japanese island of Iwo Jima during World War II. At the World War II Memorial, stone pillars and bronze wreaths commemorate the more than 400,000 Americans, service members, who fell in that conflict. At the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, the names of the more than 58,000 men and women who died serving in that controversial war are etched on an imposing black granite wall. Millions of visitors come to the U.S. Capitol on Memorial Day, not only to mourn the fallen, but also to celebrate the day and have fun. A long-standing tradition in Washington, the National Memorial Day Parade takes place each year on the National Mall and features military bands and marching units. Memorial Day is also a day of optimism, marking the beginning of the summer season in the U.S. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
That's all we prepared for you this rainy Monday here in Washington. We now leave you with Kwebna Kwebna and the song Donobi.
Oh yeah, yet
Listening to Kwebna Kwebna and the song Doni B. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Andreas Regis, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The short-term ceasefire in Sudan to allow for humanitarian aid has raised hopes that the fighting between warring security forces loyal to two rival generals could be brought to an end. The violence of the last several weeks has resulted in thousands of deaths. Additionally, some 840,000 people have been displaced within Sudan, and another 250,000 have been forced to flee the country. In a message to the Sudanese people, Secretary of State Antony Blinken called the violence senseless and devastating.
The whole world has been united in calling for an end to this conflict and insisting on a negotiated solution.
The short-term ceasefire that went into effect May 22nd was arranged to allow for humanitarian assistance and repair of essential services and infrastructure. It was the result of intensive diplomacy by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the United States. A remote mechanism backed by the United States is used to monitor the ceasefire. If the ceasefire is violated, we'll know and we will hold violators accountable through sanctions and other means, said Secretary Blinken.
We facilitated the ceasefire, but it's the responsibility of the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces to implement it.
The United States remains the largest single donor of humanitarian aid to Sudan and on May 23rd announced $245 million in additional support to the people of Sudan and neighboring countries experiencing the impacts of the ongoing humanitarian crisis. In his message to the Sudanese people, Secretary of State Blinken emphasized that Sudan civilians must be the ones to define Sudan's path going forward.
You should lead a political process to restore Sudan's democratic transition and form a civilian government. Sudan's political future belongs to you, the people of your great nation. Your military should withdraw from governance and focus on defending the nation from external threats. The United States of America supports a democratic government that represents the full diversity of the Sudanese people.
Only a civilian government can succeed in delivering stability and security and fulfilling your aspirations for freedom, for peace, for justice, declared Secretary Blinken. You can count on the United States to remain by your side until you achieve this goal.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.